welcoming back to the program Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Rich.
How are you doing during these interesting times in America?
As well as anyone has a right to, I'll put it that way. We're healthy, we're safe and sound, managed to amuse ourselves to a degree, but obviously I'm antsy. I'm glad to see in the Massachusetts outside restaurants are opening, and I haven't done one yet, but it's on my plan for the weekend, and I'm anxious to get out and do some stuff. But look, I can't complain. Nobody's sick, and I don't even know anybody. I'd have to go a couple of people removed to find somebody. So how could we complain?
Good. Well, we're glad to hear that, and hopefully some sports coming back, but some setbacks in that plan today. Let's start with Major League Baseball. The latest offer, apparently, 72 game schedule, 70% prorated pay, 80% if the postseason is completed. A whole lot of numbers, but not much clarity here. Can the two sides figure this out, or will the commissioner have to step in?
He has to have power to decree 48 games and 50, whatever. Which would not go over very, very well with the players, but he could do that if it comes to that. I am exasperated, all right, because baseball has been part of my life literally before I can remember, because, most people's memories start 4 or 5. There's a picture of me in the local paper at age 2 in a baseball uniform. My father was involved in minor league baseball. I was raised in baseball. If I had to filibuster for my life for an hour or 24 hours, the topic I would choose would be baseball, because I know more about baseball than any other topic that I know anything about. And I to see what they're doing here, risking the future of this game, it is no longer the national pastime. They must think it's 1955, and they think that there's 12 NFL teams and 6 hockey teams, 4 of them in the U.S., and 8 NBA teams, none west of Minnesota, and college football hasn't risen to where it is today, and that they're the king. They're not. And people could easily learn to live without them. Why can't someone who can possibly knock some sense into their heads to get them back on the field?
Well, and I wonder, too, if part of this is that times have changed since I grew up and you grew up, and not that the business owners team owners weren't business guys who wanted money, but there were more sportsmen back in the day, and these guys just look at this often as one of their other business and corporate holdings, and they don't seem to share the love of the game that we had in past generations.
Well, I can't speak for all of them. I think so. There's probably varying degrees of it, obviously. They're a group of different billionaires with different personalities and interests and motivations for being involved in baseball. Probably too many of them probably answer that description. What they've got to get in their heads is this is not just about 2020. I'm talking about we can talk about the towering figure over all this. It's about the future. It's about the preservation of the game and getting it and keeping it in American consciousness, and not assuming it that it's going to that the people are going to embrace it the way they once did. Plus, what really worries me on top of everything else is this destruction of the minor leagues that's about to take place. Baseball's in peril. They don't seem to get it. They don't seem to get that people think the games are too long. That people don't want to see games where there's only 3 outcomes, strikeout, walk, or home run. This game needs fixing anyway. And then before we finish, go watch it. And they just have to grasp this big picture. I've said, for a few weeks now, what they need to do is get an agreement that they both hate, because we know they're not going to get one that they both love.
Right.
But if we get one that they both hate,
NBA, some bumps in the road today, and their plan to get things going at Disney in a few weeks' time. Apparently, several players will be involved in a conference call tonight, and suddenly they're concerned about the quarantine situation, essentially being locked down at Disney, and I'm sure looking at the spike in cases in the state of Florida.
Yes, I know that this is not going to go as smoothly as they hoped. It looked like at one point that they were in the forefront and had got the right idea, and they got the bubble situation. They got an appropriate place they could pull this off. But now, as it's getting, the reality is setting in, and players are rethinking what life would be like, of course. Then, of course, there's always the health and safety issue, which has got to be paramount for anybody coming back anywhere. I think the big thing, that the stupid mistake they're making is bringing back more than the playoff teams. They should just go to the playoffs. They had the perfect gift given to them with clear delineation between the 8th and 9th place teams in each conference, not like hockey, which has got a confused thing, and they would have unhappy people if they arbitrarily declared who should be and who should not be in the playoffs. Basketball could order this. We've got our playoff teams, and not bringing in these other superfluous teams with unhappy players. It's just, I don't understand how they're not smarter than that.
Bob, we lost, I think, one of the all-time greats in the NBA recently. He didn't get the attention of some others, but can you talk about the impact that Wes Unseld had on the game?
Wes Unseld, who I first saw in 1966 as a sophomore at Louisville when I was broadcasting DC basketball, and he dropped 35 and 26 on us, but we prevailed in triple overtime only because he fouled out before it was over. Wes Unseld, who was the Rookie of the Year and MVP in 1968-69, only one of two people in the history of the league to do it. Wes Unseld, who was 6'6 plus afro, played center. Wes Unseld, who was one of the handful of greatest outlet passers of all time. Wes Unseld, who averaged 14 points a game for a career rebounding, and who was a selfless team player, much better offensive player than people think, because he didn't feel that was, it wasn't necessary for him to be that. He did what he did. Wes Unseld, who has once said, set a pick and it takes you 24 seconds to run around it. And then when his career was over, and the MVP of the 78 finals, and when it was over, he became a coach and an executive, and is absolutely a classy gentleman and a humanitarian who founded a school along with his wife, and one of the great people that ever graced the NBA, and was a great American. And you're right, he doesn't get his due outside of his home area of Louisville and also in Baltimore and Washington.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. The Red Sox made a pretty bold statement yesterday talking about Torrey Hunter's claims of racism affecting him when he played in Boston. And the Red Sox have said they accept his version of things. And clearly this has been an issue in Boston, but has it ever really gone away?
No, it's also living with the legacy of the history. The history that goes back to them being the last team to integrate in 59 with Humpsey Green in baseball, the legacy of Bill Russell's well-known life issues in Boston in the beginning, and particularly in the first 6-7 years of his living in Boston, the many things that people know that we can't run away from, and that they tried to patch up. But the one thing I'll say is I believed every word that Torrey Hunter said, because Torrey Hunter is a reputable source. One of the classiest guys in baseball in his time. And I had no doubt that he was telling the truth, even though there were some media people down here, not print people, but radio people who were disparaging him. I believed it. But I also think that this is hardly unique to Boston. We have to live down this terrible legacy, but don't kid yourself that this couldn't happen anywhere else in America. And that there aren't still racist people that walk into ballparks and arenas. And look at what hockey's going through. Look at hockey.
Right.
The consortium of the African, well, I shouldn't say that, the African-Canadian and African-American hockey players, past and present, who are getting together to alert people to the reality of their life in that world, which people aren't really well aware of. But the Red Sox are hitting this head on, I think, is very exemplary, a very good idea, and being out in front of it on it, I think, is a very good policy.
As pro sports try and figure out how to get back and restart or begin seasons, also a lot of talk on college campuses about what to do, and that, to me, that's a different animal, because you might be able to get a pro player to sign a waiver that they won't hold the team liable if they get sick. I don't know that you can do that with college players. Do you think either the fall season or the college basketball season is in jeopardy?
Mm-hmm. This is very complicated due to the wide geographic nature, the conference situations, different states, different school policies. Some schools that are willing to go back early, other schools that aren't. How is this going to play out? How are you going to have scheduling? I think football is foolish to even try to get it done. And we've seen already the reports of all the positive cases of coronavirus cases that have cropped up with the testing that's been done on various campuses already. I think that they would be wise to try to postpone coming back until 2021 in the late winter and spring, and then have a truncated season, and then go back in real life in 2021, if not even 2022. is a very complicated issue in college, and I don't think it's going to be resolved very easily at all.
You celebrated an anniversary recently, 52 years ago, that you began your internship at the Boston Globe.
Yeah, on June 10th, 68 was my first day, and met a guy named Gammons, and we wound up working on the same story in the aftermath of the Bobby Kennedy assassination. Our first joint story in the during the Globe was a joint byline, and it was the only time I ever appeared in print in Boston as Robert Ryan. And I asked him the next day if they could deformalize that, and I preferred to go with Bob, which I did for in the next 44 years with the Globe, and it's been 8 years since I officially retired. Yeah, that was a momentous day for me, and beginning of a career that I'm proud of, and I had so much fun, and derived so much satisfaction, and I was so lucky to do it in Boston and doing it for the right paper in the right city.
All right, before we let you go, I have to ask about music. Have you been listening to more Sinatra or Beatles lately?
I've been mixing it up. As a matter of fact, I'm a Sirius XM devotee. And my set channels include the Beatles Channel 18, the Sinatra Channel 71, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the Broadway, ESPN Radio, of course. And today I listened to the entirety of the Sinatra Channel replayed the famous main event, October 13th, 1974, Sinatra Madison Square Garden, with the incredible, over-the-top, predictably bombastic introduction by Howard Cosell. Did you know that Howard Cosell was the MC that night?
I did not know that, but now I have to hear it.
Introduction will stand the test of time as the most amazing introduction any entertainer has ever gotten anywhere ever in the English language, at least in America. Maybe the Brits have come up with some good ones, but I listened to that whole. But I've been listening to mixing it up. I couldn't live without SiriusXM. I'll be honest. I wouldn't back out of the driveway unless I had it on.
I shouldn't say that on a terrestrial station, but I feel the same way.
Well,
absolutely.
I mean, I still listen to my local radio, but I can't imagine. I'm sorry. Until they come up with programming to comparable to that, this is an unpaid announcement here, folks. Unpaid announcement for SiriusXM. Put it in your mix, but don't abandon your local radio.
There you go. Take it from Bob. Bob, always a treat. Thanks so much for being with us. Stay safe, be well, and we'll check in with you again soon.
Thanks. Okay, Rich. Take care. Bye-bye.